I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting. Each week, I speak with authors, experts, and thought leaders on everything from American history and democracy to how to be a better person on the internet. And don't miss my extremely popular docuseries, which educate you on things you never learned in history class. Follow and listen to Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Guys, by now you've heard me talk about Collars & Co., makers of the dress collar polo. They've already sold over a million of these amazing shirts. Well, Collars & Co. just came out with the new Maverick Performance Blazer. This blazer is sharp and wrinkle-resistant, so you can travel anywhere with it. Just throw it in your bag and it will remain wrinkle-free. It even comes with security zip pockets, a sunglasses loop, and an optional pocket square. So visit collarsandco.com and use code TIKI for 20% off at collarsandco.com. Guys, by now you've heard me talk about Collars & Co., makers of the dress collar polo. They've already sold over a million of these amazing shirts. Well, Collars & Co. just came out with the new Maverick Performance Blazer. This blazer is sharp and wrinkle-resistant, so you can travel anywhere with it. Just throw it in your bag and it will remain wrinkle-free. It even comes with security zip pockets, a sunglasses loop, and an optional pocket square. So visit collarsandco.com and use code TIKI for 20% off at collarsandco.com.
Feels like it's been a long time anyway.
It was a long baseball season for us here in Baltimore. It was a grind. It was a lot of things, but it's been a long time, but again, it's been quite a long season for
No, but you know what? People like you are what makes it palatable. People like you are what makes like tough seasons digestible. Honestly, because I think that the interest of a team, sure, when they're riding high, World Series team, great. That's easy to talk about. When they're not doing well, there's still, as you know, there's still interest because people like being miserable, you know?
Yes, that's true. Again, especially with the way the Ravens have been playing in Baltimore, it's a lot of that going on.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I apologize.
I'm a Titans fan, so I'm used to this.
Oh, there you go. So, hey, listen, we're turning the page. We're going to talk about the new manager. We're going to talk about – I really wanted to talk to you for a lot of reasons. I did look back and I looked at – wasn't the last time you were on, because the last time you were on, I think, with our guy Reese Green, sort of recapping what happened to the Orioles after last year. And then, but going back, I think the last time we had talked on the podcast, it was February 1st, 2024. And the title of the podcast was "Let's Celebrate the New Orioles Owners."
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so I distinctly remember that time where you had, not only did you have the new owners come in and they're like, oh, you got a new owner, finally, things are going to change. But you also had the Corbin Burns trade, mm-hmm. And then it was just this expectation that after those two things happened, that it was just going to, you were going to take a totally different philosophy and it was going to take off and you were going to have this dynasty. Well, a couple things haven't happened, including, by the way, you know, a lot of these things that we, in terms of player acquisition and, mm-hmm. and owners. So I want to start there, Eric. I want to start with the owners, the ownership group. From back then, first of all, am I misrepresenting any of this at all or no?
No, you're spot on with it all.
Okay. So looking back at that time and going toward net right now, where you have Rubenstein, who is out there with his water cannon and being man of the people and everything else, what is the perception of it now?
It's kind of split among the fan base, at least. I am still a massive fan of him. Again, I think it's crazy that people have already, like, there are people who were like, you got to jump off. We're jumping off the Rubenstein wagon. Like you said, it's been a year, almost 2 years now. Like, we gotta start being patient with this, for a lot of the fans who are upset. But he has said all the right things. He's been like, you know, we are open to spending money. We want to spend money. There's no limit on what we can spend, how we can spend, where, you know, any of that stuff when it comes to players and all that. So he's saying all the right things. And again, in this disaster of a season that we just finished up, I mean, in the middle of it, there were people being like, I need to hear from David Rubenstein. I need to hear him. I need to see him at a press conference. And I'm like, I'm telling people, I'm going, whoa, whoa, whoa. We just got out of the John Angelos relationship where we literally saw an owner who was meddling in stuff. And you see it in Dallas with Jerry Jones, and you saw it with Dan Snyder in DC. And it's like, why do you want your owner to be meddling and have his hands in the pot and be mixing it up? I'm like, we don't want that. I don't want to hear from him. I hope he's on vacation. Like, if I hope he just signs checks and you know, goes from there. So I guess I've the way I've been up the what I've been upset at isn't David Rubenstein or the ownership and Grant Hill and Cal Ripken and all that. Like, Cal sitting behind home plate and people are like, he needs to get in the dugout and tell him. No, he doesn't. I think he needs to sit there and enjoy his beer and a popcorn. I don't want the owners getting involved in that unless it's spending money. That's what you want. But it comes down to the front office and the general manager or the president of baseball operations, which we found out about, you know,
Yeah, right. That
maybe
was
a month
bizarre.
ago. Yeah, kind of weird, but again, he's the one running it all. I don't want Rubenstein stepping over Elias, and because again, Rubenstein has said multiple times, I don't know baseball. He's like, I'm just a fan. I don't know baseball. The guy openly admitted that. I don't want him sticking his nose where it doesn't belong, and I think he's done a good job of that. And people didn't like that that the Orioles put out a bobblehead of himself. I mean, you would have thought that, you know, that was like the worst thing anybody could have ever done. It didn't help that they had just lost like 24-2 on Easter or something. But no, again, I'm perfectly fine with him. I don't need him getting involved in day-to-day baseball business and having press conferences when they lose by 20, because that's when you get into the Jerry Jones world and nobody wants that. So I'm still as I am riding high on Rubenstein. I know a lot of others aren't, but I don't really know what they're expecting or what they want out of him. Again, he's not gonna, the last time I said this too, the last time we had our owner go over the GM's head, he signed Chris Davis to a 7-year deal, and everybody, you know, they loved that at the time, and how are we doing with that now? So I'm in the camp of Rubenstein can be Mr. Splash and give out hats and you know, have a grand old time at the game. I don't want him involved in the baseball stuff. So I hope he says the right things, but you know, and just sign the checks and contracts, and we'll get going from there.
There you go. Oh, there you go. That you're absolutely right, but it's just sign the checks. So this is where it gets interesting to me, because it's, you know, the perception is if you're a GM or president of baseball operations and the owner says, hey, listen, we have the money, do what you got to do, then typically that president of baseball operations or general manager does what they need to do. And usually that means spending money. That means actually having presenting checks for him to sign. So that said, why haven't those checks been signed? Why haven't enough of those checks been signed to at least give the perception that it is going to be different? And before you answer, I will say this. I get it. Like, I get this isn't just you want to do the shock and awe, a bunch of free agents and bad contracts and all of this, but there's a lot of extensions. There's a lot of free agents that they didn't get. There's a lot of moves that they didn't make. There's trades that they didn't make because they were worried about not signing, whatever it is. Who is at fault in that respect?
I think that's got to fall on Mike Elias. Again, the new I saw the acronym POBO,
Pobo,
POBO. Yeah,
that's one
which
of the things. Yeah, our guy producer Evan always put Pobo in the headlines, and I feel like a little awkward, but I guess, you know, it takes up too much room, you know,
it's
so.
I saw it for the first time in writing, like on one of the Orioles beat reporters' tweets, and I was like, oh, this is perfect. So Pobo Elias, that's what they're calling him. I think it falls on him and you know, the front office, because like you were saying, that's their job to sign the extensions, to sign these free agents, and you know, to make the trades that we've been sitting here waiting. I mean, at you know, I think it was 22, I guess, when they traded Trey Mancini to Houston, and The clubhouse was upset. They were a couple games out of a playoff spot, and Mike Elias flew to Texas where the team was, and you know, it reassured them that it was going to be okay and they were going to make moves. And the famous quote that all Orioles fans, we're going to remember this till the day we die, is he said, "It's liftoff from here. This is liftoff." And we're just like, we're kind of waiting still.
But
We're.
you did have a little liftoff. Like, again, you had the Corbin Burns thing. You had this. I mean, Eric, like, to go back to not to revisit sort of the last couple of years, but this is one of the reasons, like, I find the Orioles so fascinating as we sit here in the World Series. The Orioles should be in the World Series. Everyone thought the Orioles by now would be in the World Series, or at least be on the doorstep, not only because you get Burns, you show the aggressiveness, but because Norfolk had been like, was basically a major league team playing in the minor leagues. And now we look at it like, what? Like, not really. So anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt, but at the same time, I am sort of anxious to see, like, hey, I guess the question I have, you have the Burns trade, right? You have that. You make the playoffs. Burns was actually the only pitcher in the postseason last year that pitches 8 innings, which is remarkable. And so you have that. Do you feel like they had a reversal of course because they were maybe spooked because they did the one and done with Burns?
Yeah, maybe. And because again, Elias can go out and say, "Look, guys, we tried, and we, you know, we went out and got Burns, and obviously the Boras stuff, you knew it was going to be hard to re-sign him, and you know that came to be true because it seemed like he was always going to go home." But yeah, it's almost like, you know, he's like, "Hey guys, I tried, and we got burned by that." Not that they got burned. Like you said, he was awesome. He was the only person that showed up for them in the playoffs, and you know, they tried it and they didn't lose much. DL Hall, I like, and he's a, you know, a good reliever, and Joey Ortiz, but and that's it. You know, so it's not like they traded five massive can't miss prospects, and now they're saying, "Oh my God, our cupboard's bare." You know, cupboard wasn't even touched. That was the stuff sitting out on the counter.
I
It's not
know, right?
even
That
cupboard
was
was there.
universally, everyone was like, "Oh, look at you're able to make that move because sure, these players might be major leaguers, but you have better major leaguers around the corner,
Oh
right?"
yeah, absolutely. And so again, they tried that, but that was kind of the only move. And especially going into last year, obviously Burns signs in Arizona in late December, early January. I can't remember which one. And everybody and their mother knew, all right, well, we need to get some pitching now. And the pitching was Charlie Morton. And yes, I understand you need that veteran presence. And it didn't work. It worked out the last, I don't know, 7 or 8 weeks. The first 5 weeks, though, were arguably some of the worst
It was
pitching.
Morton and Sagano, right? I mean, that
Morton,
was the answer.
Segano, yes, they traded for Eflin, you know, at the deadline the year, what, 24, I guess. What's that, 24? Yeah, and then they got Segano, and then they signed, and then they traded the, they did unload some other prospects, Connor Norby and Kyle Stowers for Trevor Rogers, who, again, we saw. I don't know if Boston fans know, we that second game of the doubleheader where the Orioles got roasted, I mean, killed, obviously, in the first game. And then Rogers came up and was the 26th man for that night game. And I can't remember the final score. I think it was like 3-2. The Orioles won. That was like where it started for Trevor
That's what
Rogers.
an
And
incredible story that is, right?
it was unbelievable. But like, we always focus, like, it's like before the doubleheader and after the doubleheader. That's how we think of the season. Because that literally in between that game, in between those doubleheaders is when the season for the Orioles kind of started ticking up. But yeah, again, it wasn't enough, and we have been sitting there waiting, and it's like, okay, well, maybe they won't trade for Michael King or Dylan Cease or Garrett Crochet, who is the guy that everybody would, you know, if you're gonna break some eggs to make your omelet with a Kobe Mayo or a Heston Kerstad or, you know, as some any of these guys, that's the guy to go for. And obviously the Red Sox stepped up, and boy, oh boy, did that pay dividends for them. And they got him signed and all that. And that's what Orioles fans are like, that, you know, we're the guy looking at the girl that we wanted to go to prom with, being like,
Well,
yeah, it must be nice.
did you think that to go back to that time? So it was incredible. Like everyone wanted to see Norfolk. Norfolk was going to be this incredible embarrassment of riches.
It was football scores. They were winning 14, 17 to
Right,
6,
right.
and, you know,
Congratulations to
14 to
Buckrig.
3. Yeah, yes.
So, but it was looking back at it now, how much did they overvalue? This is always the danger, right? That teams like, we can't give up this for Crochet. But still, like, a lot of times that's okay. That's okay. But they're so paranoid about it because, like, this is going to be the foundation. These are going to be the controllable guys. How much should they overvalue these guys other than maybe Gunnar Henderson? I mean, I don't know. Even Adley Rutschman. I don't know. How much do they overvalue these guys?
I think they did a lot. And I was watching MLB Network yesterday, and they were talking about the new manager signing. And DeRosa, you would have thought that he saw his dog get hit by a car. He's just like, these Orioles, man. And he said the same thing you did. He's like, we thought they'd be here. We thought we'd be in Baltimore, you know, eating crab cakes before a World Series game. And he's like, you couldn't have told us anything different. That was the plan. And he's like, and he said they didn't make the moves that everybody thought they would. They didn't make the moves they needed to make. And he goes, they overvalued their prospects. And I think it was somebody else, maybe Shahadi, said, you know, to be fair, everybody in baseball does that except for pretty much the Padres and Dombrowski.
Right,
and
right.
Know, Phillies. And I, you know, I'm thinking about that last night. And I'm like, I mean, it's true. It's they're so afraid to lose these guys. And again, I love him, but a guy like Kobe Mayo, and they're like, he has 40 home run power. And it's like, that's great. He would have 50 home run power, you know, in Cincinnati or in Boston, where, you know, where you could have made a trade for some of these guys. And they just, it's like, they don't want to be wrong. They don't want to be proven wrong. And I don't know. I mean,
it's not only them though, Eric, it's a lot of people in baseball. That's the thing that drives me nuts because it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. If Kyle Stowers is good,
yep.
It's okay. If the ultimate goal is to win the World Series, that's what it is.
Yep.
And the guys, you know, we have evidence of this. Like you need the guys. So yeah.
Again, I mean, just the fact that they were willing to hold on to a lot of those guys, and again, they kind of sat in Norfolk and weren't even really helping the major league team. If they were helping the team, you're like, all right, I get it, I understand why, because they're part of the future. But a lot of them, you know, weren't, and now we're kind of in this position, and they have refueled and gotten some strength back in the farm system. But yeah, I mean, they could have traded Heston Kjerstad, who now nobody knows if he'll ever play baseball again due to his myocarditis, and he has some other health issues. And, you know, obviously that's terrible, but that's a guy, same thing with Kobe Mayo and a couple of these other guys. They could have traded them and gotten something back and, you know, been part of a package for a big league pitcher, a big time pitcher. And they just kind of sat on them like eggs and waited for them to hatch. And baseball is the one sport where you can swing and miss and it's perfectly okay. You can make a trade for a guy and you go, you know what? It didn't work out. We're going to go right back at it again. And it just seems like the Orioles, their front office, they are known for, we're going to do it our way and it's the right way. And we're going to show you that it's the right way. And you're going to acknowledge us saying, wow, look at them. They did it the right way. They drafted well, they developed well, and they won the World Series. I don't care how they win the World Series. I don't care if they trade. And I was talking about that with the Dodgers. People are like, oh, they buy their team. I don't care how my team wins the World Series. If it's the flags fly forever, those banners are going to be up there. Do whatever you got to do to win this. Who cares how many homegrown guys you got? You know, it's like nobody cares if an NCAA team has five McDonald's All-American. No, nobody cares. They want the ring. That's all that matters. So it's a league-wide problem. Take away four or five teams. But yeah, it's that has hit Baltimore harder than probably any other team. And it's tough to kind of swallow that.
By the way, so well put. You nailed that. And also, so now I want to turn the attention. Enough of the revisiting what went wrong. Let's talk about what might go right. Because I want you to feel good about your team.
Trying.
I want you to feel good about your job. But you're so right about the world.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting, where you'll learn about American history, current events, and so much more. Follow and listen to me on Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Series. I mean, this is you articulated it perfectly because I just feel like that teams and some executives will say this about other teams. They're losing sight of the goal here, which is to win the World Series. It's not sustainability to me is the dirtiest word. I get it. Like, I get you want to have sustainability, but if you have the chance to win, and by the way, Now, the Orioles weren't in position to do it. It's day late, a dollar short in terms of getting going. But if you were an American League team and you were in it at all, then let's go for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, this Blue Jays team is a good team, but it's not, they're not unbeatable. So, yeah. So,
yeah, this was the year to do that. And that's why I was so upset, because very early on, you're like, no one is running away with this division. You know, again, the Yankees, anything can happen with them and Judge. And it was like, this is really there for the taking. Obviously, the Tigers were there, but, you know, the Mariners came on late. But you're like, no one is going to win 104 and run away with this thing, you know, like the Dodgers were supposed to in the NL. But yeah, this you know, it was up for the taking for everyone. So.
What was it? What was the Orioles over under win total this year? Do you remember?
I think it was 86. I think it was 86.5.
Okay.
And they won 91 the year before.
Yeah, I thought it would be higher. Like there was a, because I think that when people looked at the division, obviously it was wide open, mm-hmm. but I would imagine that the Orioles were probably, I don't know what the Fangraphs odds or whatever it is, but the Orioles, even coming in this year, even without the number one guy, number one starter, they're like, oh, they'll figure it out. They'll figure it out. And all these guys will take a step forward. They didn't know about Grayson Rodriguez being hurt, and I get that. But still, yeah. Wow. Man, I just, and you mentioned, so this, again, I don't want to be a hypocrite. I do want to spin it forward. I do want to say, here we go, Orioles World Series 2026. And I love Trevor Rogers, man. Like, you talked about him, because ultimately, however they landed with him, like, this is, however that happened, they got their number one starter. Like, this is the hardest thing to get. This is why they trade for Corbin Burns, and you can build off of that. Am I wrong about that? Is that the feeling of this thing?
Yeah. I mean, it's almost even a toss-up with him. Kyle Bradish, too. When he came back, he was, again, if you watch him in 24, that was, or I guess 23. I'm getting all my years mixed up. But I think he finished fourth in Cy Young. He was incredible. And he came back last year. You know, towards the last, I don't know, 6 weeks or something, 5 weeks, and he didn't miss a beat. So now, again, in our mind, we're thinking, all right, you got these guys 1-2, Dean Kramer penciled in as a 3. Grayson, you know, again, we don't really know about him, and it's going to kind of be silly to expect a full season out of him just with all the injuries. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, that's a good top of the end rotation right there. And I would go in any playoff series with a 1-2-3 of Rogers, Bradish, Kramer, in any order you want to go with. But obviously, again, us Orioles fans, we saw it all last year. Like, we know that we're going to need pitching and guys are going to get hurt. So that's still, I think, circled high on everyone's list is starting pitching, go out and get someone. And you know, why not have four number twos, or, you know, three number threes or something like that? Because injuries are going to happen. We lived that last year.
All right. So give me your wish list. We'll get to the manager in a second, but give me your wish list. Give me your realistic wish list. Let's assume, this is a big assumption, but let's assume that Mike Elias said, okay, we're doing a little bit course correction. You know, we thought that we would be able to sort of do it this way last year. Didn't work out. The owner, like you said, the owner's ready to sign some checks. Give me your wish list of what you want to happen this offseason.
It's tough. I mean, again, starting pitching, I think, has to be number one. You're not going to go anywhere without it. And you saw that last year when they started out every game down 6-0 in the second inning. And you were already flipping over to see what was on Game Show Network, or, you know, how much daylight was left and you could go outside or something. So obviously I think they do need another front end of the rotation guy. If it's Dylan Cease, if it's a rehabbing Michael King, sure, but they need to do something. They need a middle of the order bat, which is tough because they don't really have anywhere to put him. You got guys at first base. You got, you know, Samuel Basaya was going to play there. You still have Orion Mountcastle. I as of now, he may be a non-tender guy. You know, your first baseman hitting 6 home runs, 7 home runs, whatever it was last year, is not really going to cut it. Adley's going to play some first, but, you know, again, then you have Adley and Basaya a catcher. So you got Westberg, you got Gunner, you got Jackson. The infield's full. So again, a middle of the order bat would be nice, and a guy who could hit 40. They thought they signed that guy last year from up north, and the book on him, Tyler O'Neill, was he's not going to stay healthy. And lo and behold, he didn't. I don't know if you guys even saw, he got pulled from a game late, maybe second half of the season. And they said with general soreness, and we started like doing the salute tweets and calling him General Soreness. So then he went on a run where he hit 5 home runs in 4 games or something. And we're just all saluting the general.
By the way, I think I asked him this, but I can't remember the answer. Where do you guys open? Where did the Orioles open?
I don't know. I don't remember. I don't think it's in Toronto again. I hope it is. I don't know.
This is the time-honored tradition. This was one of my proudest moments of the entire season when I texted Tyler O'Neill the morning of opening day, say, congratulations on your home run.
I won some money off that, too. So
did you really?
Good for you. Oh, that was it. Yeah, we love that here. Because everyone knew about it. We're all paying attention to it. And right away, we're like, oh, it's the Maple Leaf Masher. Like, yeah.
When it comes to what your family eats and drinks, you know your choices matter. You're the expert because you know what fits your life. And getting it right starts with good information. That's why America's beverage companies are sharing more information about our ingredients at goodtoknowfacts.org. No spin, no judgments, just the facts straight from the experts for more than 140 beverage ingredients. Visit goodtoknowfacts.org.
Up in Toronto,
it's unbelievable. It's one of the greatest records of all. It's crazy.
So they're home versus the Twins. That's their home opener. I think that's their regular season opener. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
March 26th.
All right. The ball's not going to be flying. Cold weather. So all right. So you mentioned Cease. You mentioned King. Give me if you said okay, position player. That you think it's tough because I get it. Like the free agent class kind of stinks this year.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of, especially like you're talking about outfielders. It's not great. So I don't know if anybody who you like. Okay,
it's Schwarber would be great. Yeah, it's not going to happen. Pete Alonso would be great. Not going to happen. Again, they don't have anywhere to put these guys.
Yeah.
Like you said, they're paying Tyler O'Neill. You got Colton Cowser, and then you got Dylan Beavers, who was a monster at the end of the year. So it's like, I truly don't know, unless there's some non-tenders or some trades, Again, you got Kobe Mayo, who's going to be a bench player, and these guys, Basayo, Adelig, you got to, there's no place to fit any real new blood. So it's, you need stuff, but how are you going to make it work?
Well, the other part about that is trading guys. Like, so obviously we talked about the embarrassment of riches, perceived riches that you had. Now it's like, okay, you want to put together a deal, like for Joe Ryan, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to put together that deal. While all of a sudden it's not necessarily like you have the ammunition that everyone thought you had before, mm-hmm. because the guys that, were perceived that way aren't perceived that way anymore.
Yeah.
So I mean, is that fair to say that like to do that mammoth deal that everyone wanted the Orioles to do, that's going to be a whole lot more difficult?
Oh yeah. It's, the value on those guys has dropped because again, you've seen now basically full seasons of them and know what they are. But again, the off season talk of like, well, you could throw, this guy's a number 4 prospect and this guy's their number 6 and you could package those guys together. That's gone because again, now we have a full year track record and you've seen strikeout rates be sky high and you've seen guys get hurt and can't stay healthy. And now it's like, we don't want that. Why would we want that? So that's where I was happy with the deadline and what they did and the amount of player, just guys that they got back. I was like, I'm on the record. I don't want to see any players, any of these minor leaguers that the Orioles got back at the deadline. I don't want to see any of them in an Orioles uniform ever because those are the guys that you can trade now. Again, mm-hmm. they're not the homegrown guys. They were brought in from the O'Hearn trade and Laureano and Mullins and all these guys. So that's where I do think that Elias in the front office did a good job. And they didn't fully restock the system with a Basayo, who's the number 1 prospect, and a Mayo, who's the number 3 prospect. And all those guys, they're not the sexy names, but they're still very good players who ideally maybe now you can do a Mayo and 2 of those guys. I don't even remember the guys they got from San Diego.
Yeah.
And kind of fill in the package now with some of these other quote smaller pieces and go from there instead of 2 massive prospects. Maybe you can do 1 and I don't know, a guy on the Mountcastle or somebody, and then 2 other guys and you're not really losing that much value and you're getting, a ton back. So they sat on him too long and waited. So
obviously their first big acquisition is the manager, Craig Albernaz. And The first manager that actually talks like my dad.
Thick accent. Thick Boston accent. Yeah.
I mean, I'm from Boston, but I don't have that. I mean, and I got to be honest to you, Eric. Not a lot of people do. It's like from Swansea.
He sounds like a caricature. Like it's in like Family Guy where it's like, oh, that's too much. That's over the top. I was listening to the Baltimore Banner, the newspaper here, their podcast with Paul Mancano and Andy Koski yesterday. They said when he was the bullpen catcher in San Francisco, and you probably know this, or you may know it, but he was programming the pitchcom. Yeah. And they said, I think Jock Peterson like listened to it once and was like, I don't know what you're trying to say. Like, cause it was his voice. And they were like, I can't understand what you're saying. Like, so
it's funny you say that. We actually tried to, I was talking to the guy who was programming for the Red Sox, and we tried to find, we asked this woman who's got a pretty big Instagram following just based on her like over the top Boston accent and mannerisms. And we're like going to hire her to do that exact thing. We should have just hired Albernaz. So it's
he would have been perfect. Yeah. Again, it's like good luck stealing these signs when our own players don't know what pitch is coming.
So tell me, so obviously David Hyle is a pretty well-respected guy. Tell me what the organization was looking for when they hired Albernaz in terms of philosophical changes, demeanor. I don't know. What do you think that they were looking at? Why was this the guy?
So going into the offseason, I thought that it was going to be like the veteran guy. You know, we're like, oh, that Bruce Bochy would be nice. And then he became available and you're like, oh, he would be perfect. Again, a guy who has been there. He has won. He has lost. He knows how to win. There's nothing in baseball Bruce Bochy hasn't seen before. And I thought that that's who they were going to go after. Somebody who could command a locker room and a dugout and, you know, whip these young guys into shape and get them going and all that. And again, I feel like they got the best of both worlds. Again, you know, Albernaz turns 43, I think, Thursday. So happy early birthday to him.
I like how you look over your shoulder like you have it marked on your calendar.
I have my calendar. I know his birthday's on the 30th. So, I will write his birthday up there later. But again, you know, they wanted a guy, I think, who has won and who has been there. And obviously he hasn't, you know, won a World Series and been there. But you look at the organizations he's worked with, you know, came up as a coach in the minor leagues with Tampa, then to San Francisco, and then with Cleveland. And those three are, I mean, those organizations are well run and you know, they just are well-oiled machines and they always have a nose for October. I mean, you look at what Cleveland did the last 2 years with him and Stephen Vogt and everything I've read about him is that he was Vogt's right-hand man. And it's not, he wasn't just standing there. They said Vogt would use him for a lot of, hey, what do we do? Who do we pinch hit? You know, what do we do here? And I like that he has come from those organizations and I like that he was a bullpen coach and a catching coordinator and stuff like that. Cause that, you know, the Pujols name was thrown out there and, you know, you need a player's guy. And it's like, does Albert Pujols know how to manage a bullpen? He's a fantastic player, but I don't trust him to make the right move in the bottom of the seventh with a guy on second, you know, and who does he go to and stuff like that. So I like that Craig has had these experiences and worked all around. So I do think he seems like an old soul kind of. I went digging through his Twitter and he has some great, great stuff. He was in an excavator in Rochester, New York with his t-shirt off. And he's like, I need extra money. And so I picked up a second job. It's very obvious. It's very late at night after a few adult services. but he seems like everything I read too was saying that he knows how to command the young guys and build good relationships with them. And again, what better team to bring that to than the Orioles? So I don't know. That's what I thought they were looking for. I think they nailed it. Everybody and their mother says it's a great move and oh, what a knockout signing and all that stuff. And that's great. But again, there's still more that needs to be done and the players need to ultimately play. But I think this is a great step in the right direction.
So. Yeah. But you know, I was going to go on this rant about how catchers are like the hottest commodity ever.
They're the best. Yeah.
If you were a catcher and you're in baseball, congratulations.
Yeah.
Like this is, everybody's hiring catchers for everything.
Like
this
you get is, the front pass to the fa- to the front of the line, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's so true. So, anyway, that's for another day. But I will say this is that, and this is one of the reasons really why I feel like the Orioles are such a fascinating thing, is that, yeah, you know, they got to make moves. There's no question about it. But Albernaz is walking into a team that is still good. Like, it's still good. That last month, you rattled off Bradish, and you met, you know, obviously you talked about Rodgers. Everybody was looking at the schedules of these teams that are going for the postseason. Like, oh, they get the Orioles. Oh, they have a better record. They'll take it. The Orioles were the toughest, a tough out for that last month. And that doesn't always carry over. Now it's on Elias to actually make some moves to supplement this, to complement this. But what I'm saying is Albernaz, that's not a bad spot for him, man. Like, it's not.
No, and I kept looking at your rankings. I would see you guys post those, and it, you know,
ooh, that's like, producer Evan, yeah,
yeah. And I, you know, I think the Orioles were like four, and I was like, I don't know, they may be again. The Blue Jays last year, where'd they win 74 games and finish in last? You know, yeah. And here they are, you know, 18 innings later in the World Series.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting, where you'll learn about American history, current events, and so much more. Follow and listen to me on Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
But again, would it shock you if in a year we're sitting here right now and the Orioles, you know, I don't think it would shock anyone if you're like, oh, yep, look at that, 2026, they put it together, they made the right moves, Elias spent money, they made this trade, they made a splash, and what do you know? You know, they beat the Yankees in seven to get to the World Series. I don't think it would shock anyone, you know?
No. Producer Everett, are you there? Are you there? Evan?
Yeah.
All right, so here you go. This is perfect.
I didn't plug my mic.
But Eric, one of the great things about Evan is that you could basically change his mind. He's the easiest person to change his mind. So
okay,
I'm glad you brought up his power rankings. What you're referencing is managerial opening power rankings.
Mm-hmm.
The Orioles were number four. Is that right, fellas? Good, right?
I thought they were four. I thought that's what I had saw.
Is that right, Evan?
Yeah. Okay. It was I know Giants. I was just looking at Giants 2, Padres 3, Orioles 4. I'm blanking.
I think Braves up. Were Braves 1, maybe?
Braves, yeah. One.
Braves 1. Okay. All right. After listening to Eric, Evan,
yeah.
Do you want to bump them up from 4?
Bump them up.
Idea.
Up.
I definitely would put them. I can put them at three. We can maneuver that.
I'll send the Venmo your way after we get off.
Well, I mean, hey, the positive is he's also. You guys managed to give us two guys that relatively sucked and but got some said, decent but prospects. We have Cedric Mullins and Gregory Soto, and you got some pretty good prospects.
When Evan says give us, his contract with the New York Mets is the autograph Reed Garrett placemat in back of his head.
Okay.
So that automatically makes him part of the organization. So that's what he says us.
Hey, the other thing I saw today is Craig Albernaz, really good friends with our now former first base coach, Antoine Richardson, who caused Soto to steal like 40 bags. So now he'll probably go to Baltimore.
And he was also friends with, who's the guy that you got? Kai Correa?
It would
be a real shame if the Orioles were to pick him off too. And I don't even know if the ink is dry in that deal with the Mets, but.
True.
You know, hey, come join me in the dugout in Baltimore, buddy. This would be fun. Yeah. So
you're
the one thing I got about Kai Correa, if Carlos Mendoza has a bad first month, he's got a spot for manager probably with the Mets, whereas Orioles, I imagine Craig Albernaz is not going to get fired a month.
So, Evan, you had ahead of the Orioles that job, you had the Braves, you had the
The Giants, Tony Vitello. I mean, that was a pretty crazy hire. Yeah. He could suck or be really, really good. But I feel like that was a pretty good job. And then And then the Padres, which is the AJ Preller situation, I think is the biggest kind of question mark with that. Cause it's like, am I going to go in being like, you guys spend no money now, but you got an awesome GM and then he's going to be gone in a year. We're just going to be like the Angels or something. So
I don't know.
That's kind of the issue.
There. Eric has like convinced me, man, the Orioles, you should have ranked the Orioles higher. What's wrong with you?
I was okay. I was okay with where they are. Just I feel like the AL, you have to pay the AL East tax. Like I get that.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah.
That's true.
That's pretty good. All right. Well, we'll finish things off, and Evan, you can stay on. But I want to just, as we sit here with the World Series, and you look at these teams, because this is what every team in baseball is doing right now. They're saying, what do we have to do to be that team or to be in this spot? Or could we compete with the Dodgers or the Blue Jays, whatever it is? For you, when you watch the World Series, do you feel that? Do you feel like, we're not far away. This could happen. Like this, the iteration that there's not a lot of has to happen in order for us to actually be enjoying the fruits of the World Series like everyone thought they would be enjoying by now.
Yeah, I think for sure. Again, like I mentioned, they traded away a lot of guys and productive major league players, but that core is still there. And again, it's a running joke in Baltimore, like the young core. It's like at least 27. They are not young anymore. But I mean, I said this to people last year. If you ask any GM or front office people, like, hey, you're going to go into the year next year with Jordan Westberg, Colton Cowler, Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman, Jackson Holliday, Samuel Basayo, like that's a pretty good core. And I think I think people would love to have those guys on the team. So as long as they stay healthy, and again, those holes that we talked about are filled, and you know, the pieces are made, deals are made, and guys are brought in. I 100% can see it. It's you know, I don't think they obviously seem far off. I don't think they're that far off. But again, not everything needs to go right. Injuries are going to happen. They had great injury luck 2 years ago, and the last 2 years it's been awful. So yeah, I mean, I could definitely see it, and you know, I hope and pray that the front office is also seeing this and feeling it too, because again, the core pieces are still there, and they still have a chance to get much, much better. And that's I said they have to have an old school Washington Redskins like free agency, and like, ooh, win the offseason, win it, like put everyone on notice. It didn't work for Dan Snyder in football because it never does work in football, but it can work in baseball. Like go out and you know, be a peacock and show your feathers and show them how big and bad you are. Show them that again. You want them. You want to win, and you have the rights to do it, and you're going to do whatever it takes. Because again, people's patience are running out. It's the window is still open, even though who knows what we're going to be talking about a year from now with 2027 looming. But it's like this. You know, usually teams, they have a bad year, and it's kind of like, it's like the Phillies. Like, oh man, that window is closing. The Orioles is still wide open. This thing is there for the taking. So we're itching for it. We need it. So go make it happen.
You've given a couple great Rudy on the stool speeches, which is like basically like push the stool in the middle of the clubhouse and let me tell you what's what.
Yeah.
Like, oh, excellent job. I'm fired up for the Orioles. All you need for Evan is he's automatically, they're probably like fifth in your power rankings already, right? Next year.
I guess I'll just caution on winning the offseason. We've done that five times and sucked every year.
I was going to mention, the Red Sox actually, the Red Sox were a good example of how you can win the offseason and
that is true.
How it can save you. I mean, they did last year, and the trade deadline was another story. Anyway, Eric, thanks so much, man. I really appreciate it. You're one of the best, and we're very, very lucky to have you as part of our family, so I appreciate it.
I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to you coming down to Camden Yards again, and we'll link up. And even though they're moving the press box, people aren't happy.
Oh,
another thing.
I didn't know this.
The press box area is going to be one of these like fully, I mean, you can get prime rib and crab cake. It's going to be a restaurant. So they're moving the press box is just moving. If you're looking at it from home plate, it's just moving to the right underneath the, basically behind the visitor's dugout, underneath the
which is
level. So,
which is what Toronto did, the White Sox did, the Angels did, and the common thread is that all these press boxes were the best press boxes. The Orioles, Camden Yards had the best press box.
That's I've heard that from Rock and JCM and Matt Weyrich and all the guys in the press box. They're like, this is, you can't beat it. Bricciaroli, like, oh, she gushes about it all the time. So yeah, so now I can sit there and drink like a, I won't be sitting there. It's all like gonna be sweet people and suits and, you know.
Anyway, stuff, I always have my enjoyment always comes out. It is when I get a chance to come out and see you, you know, and the fans out there. It's a great group. It's a great group of people. So, all right, man. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you guys. This is a blast.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting, where you'll learn about American history, current events, and so much more. Follow and listen to me on Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.